Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
Without even trying very hard, all these amazing things have happened and it pulled me out of my gloom.
How important is that in terms of if people are feeling sad, to think, well, actually, this is this sadness or this trauma or this is a journey in and of itself.
Just, I won't go into absolutely everything because we'll be here all day, but I didn't have time to heal from one thing before the next thing came. So it was like layer upon layer upon layer.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to the Mental Health Monday podcast. It's brilliant to have you with us, and we've got a cracking conversation on the way. Recording this one in summer 2024, with the school holidays just getting underway. Done quite a lot of work this week around smartphone use and the effect that it has on children. And I always think that summer can be a particularly difficult point where, you know, sometimes we're at a bit of a loss around what we can do with the kids, who's looking after them and when and what they're up to. And so much of that time can be spent in screen time and looking at screens and being on screens and scrolling through things and all that kind of stuff. So a shout just right at the start for those parents who are able to make those plans to get out and about, to take part in those sporting activities, to go for the walks in the park. It can be difficult finding that time and that space. But so much research is out there now about the fact that children are so much more in tune with nature, their mood's better, they sleep better when they do get those opportunities. But summer can be such a crunch point, can't it, where it's like, well, what are we going to do? And screen time is often the most convenient thing, but there's a lot of work going on in that space. And certainly something I'll be coming back to on Mental Health Monday. Now, my guest on the programme this week is the author of a book called Finding Happiness When It Hurts. Lisa Brett is joining us for a conversation about what the book's about and the journey that she's on. Now, Lisa openly admits that she's still in a relatively difficult place in her life at the moment, despite the fact that, you know, she's been working on this book for quite some time and the book's been out for some time. But as we discuss in the conversation, life sometimes throws things at you that you're not quite expecting, and it can take a while to build through them. But actually, that's what the book's about. It's about finding a way through those difficult times, but also giving you the strength to sort of build your way back up to the place you want to be at, to find contentment again, even though things might have changed, things will have happened, life will have happened. But how are you going to come out the other side, and what's life going to look like for you at that point, and how can you be the best version of yourself at that point? So it's a really interesting conversation. Lisa is our guest on the program. We started off by talking about the fact that, no matter who we are or where we're from, we all find ourselves in difficult moments.
Well, I think it's important that we are kind to ourselves, that we practice self-care. If we're feeling low, for whatever reason, let's not be hard on ourselves and let's not be self-critical, but having awareness and perspective is important. I think that's like a good foundation from which to start looking for ways to help yourself, because the more you can do to help yourself, the more empowering that is. And empowerment gives us the ability to continue moving forward when we are facing challenging times.
There's a quote in your book, Finding Happiness When It Hurts, where you describe yourself at one point in your life as a microwaved zombie.
Yeah, I went through, and to be honest, I still am going through, you've actually got me in the middle of it, a really dark, dark time in my life. I think the best way to describe it is compounded grief and loss. This goes back about 15 years, and that encompasses a wide range of things. Family bereavement, bullying at work, which triggered me to leave work and set up a business, marital breakdown and divorce. And with divorce comes financial instability and insecurity, a whole range of things. There were health issues in my family. I won't go into absolutely everything because we'll be here all day, but I didn't have time to heal from one thing before the next thing came. So it was like layer upon layer upon layer. So it was very difficult. And actually, the book was published nearly 2 years ago. And I thought at that time, I'm coming out the other end. And I find actually I haven't yet. Other events have conspired to keep me where I am, But I remain hopeful and positive, and I'm taking the advice from my book to try and get through it all.
Sometimes people talk about, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back, and sometimes that can be a really small thing. When you're dealing with those big things, you know, when it's hay bales upon hay bales of straw being loaded on the camel's back, it's no surprise, is it? No surprise at all that if you experience grief and a marital breakdown and a job change and all that kind of stuff, of course that's going to be a big impact on us, and it's going to make us think differently about ourselves, because it touches on all those sort of those touch points in life, the way we kind of place ourselves and how we see ourselves around, well, I'm in this relationship, or this is the job that I do, or this is the role that I fulfill within a community. If any one of those elements change, it rocks your foundations, doesn't it?
But the small things can be the big things. It depends. It's about how something makes you feel. So whether it's a small thing or a big thing, it doesn't matter. It's about the perspective and how it impacts on you. For me, this layer upon layer upon layer had a profound and life-changing effect. And what I did, I was actually walking one day, took my dog out for a walk, and I met a man in a field. I knew of him. He came from the village, but I didn't know him. He was looking up at the clouds, and I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Looking at the clouds." And he said to me, "What are you doing?" And I did something completely uncharacteristic. I just went, bleh. I dumped on him all of my personal problems, everything I was going through. That is not something I've ever done before or tend to do. I confide in my girlfriends or my family. Anyway, he said, "You need to read or listen to on YouTube." And he named certain works, Genevieve Berend, Earl Nightingale. It was the starting point of what I would describe as a spiritual awakening, a spiritual path I started to take, which opened up my world to find different ways to cope with adversity, looking for the blessings in challenging situations, flipping how I think, flipping how I look at things, looking for my tribe, as I call them, supportive people. So I have found over the last few years that the best way for me personally is to do what I can to help myself.
Let's talk about blessings. There's a big section in the book about finding blessings. And some people think, "Oh, well, I don't really feel like I'm very blessed at the moment." But actually, it's almost like a practical thing you can do. You give an example, don't you, around a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
In the morning, and about how you're not just blessed to have a cup of coffee, but then if you think about the process that got this drink into your hand.
Yep.
It's a huge thing just to get your head around, isn't it?
It's about being grateful for what you have. And it can be something as simple as the first cup of coffee that you have in the morning. You know, how did that cup of coffee get into your cup and to your lips? Think of all the people that were involved in that, the growers, the transporters, the exporters, people who are shipping it across, even the person who made your mug. There's a lot behind something as simple as a cup of coffee. But I can give you a far more recent example that's actually not in the book. I suffered a very profound bereavement last year. I lost my sister, and I've been wading through the treacle of grief for the past year. And something I did recently when the first anniversary of her death came up was sit down and write about all the good things that had happened to me in that year, because quite honestly, all I can remember is the grief. So I sat down and I started writing what had happened. I've had an offer on my house. My father has relocated and is happy where he lives now. I did a trip back to Australia to visit my family. I wrote down as many things as possible that had a big positive impact on me. And I found 25 things. And do you know what? I just thought, I was gobsmacked. I thought, this is amazing. All I can remember in the past year is how awful I have felt missing my sister. And yet when I wrote down everything, I thought, actually, without even trying very hard, all these amazing things have happened. And it pulled me out of my gloom because, as I said, it was the first anniversary of her passing, so I was feeling very down. But that process of just writing down the good things that had happened, really uplifted me. So that's what I mean. I think if you can try and take your happiness or control of your happiness into your own hands as much as possible, it really can help.
How important is it, though, that you do that on your terms? Because the flip reverse of that might be, Lisa, that actually someone might come to you and go, I know you're sad about your sister, but what about this, all this other stuff? And you go, hang on a minute, let me be sad. I'm allowed to be sad about you know, a grief. How important is it that actually it comes from you? You're the one who goes, okay, maybe good things have happened. But these are the things. Is that an important part of it?
It certainly is. It gets back to the self-care. Acknowledge your feelings. You're not wrong to feel happy. You're not wrong to feel sad. You're not wrong to feel anything. But if you have an awareness of your feelings and your emotions and where they come from, if they feel uncomfortable, you can think about, what can I do now to help myself? So being in charge of your emotions as much as you possibly can, and I'm not saying it's easy, it requires work, commitment, effort, continuity. It is really important because, as I said, you know, that feeling of empowerment comes through. There might be times when you need to reach out for professional help, whether it be hypnotherapy or counselling or whatever else is right for you. But it's important that you put the work in too, because it's part of the healing. It's part of flipping how you think to make your life better and put you back on a path. If you know, if you deviated and you want to have joy in your heart again.
You mentioned grief, and grief comes up in the book. Can I ask about grief? Grief as a word is something that we associate with death of a loved one. Can I ask about grief, though, in slightly different terms? That grief can be a grief of a future which you thought you were going to have, but you're not going to have, or a plan which isn't going to come to pass. And grief is actually a bigger part of our lives than maybe we think, because it's not just about when we deal with the death of a loved one.
No, grief and loss have many, many faces. When you lose a job or choose to leave a job because it doesn't feel right for you anymore, you lose the hopes and expectations you had for that job. You lose the contact with your colleagues. You lose the security of the income that was coming in. When you divorce, you lose your home, where you live. Sometimes you lose friends. Sometimes you choose to divest yourself of certain people in your life. Sometimes people leave. The loss of your home. Loss is anything that is important to you that you no longer have anymore. And grief can come from so many different things. As you said, it's not just about a person or a pet. It touches our personal and professional lives. If it was important to us and it's left or leaving, we suffer grief. And we have to find ways to get through that, whether it, in the first instance, reducing the intensity of feeling with the aim of reducing the duration of that feeling. I think it's very important in order to get us back on track where we can find happiness again, because at the end of the day, we all deserve happiness. That's what we want. Different things make us happy. Nobody likes being sad. So let's do what we can to help ourselves.
Can I ask you about dealing with difficult moments in life, and they can come in many different forms and traumas and so on and so forth. The book doesn't say in those moments, look for happiness in all of those things. There's an element of understanding and not dwelling in that grief, but actually living through that grief and almost giving the brain time to comprehend a loss or a moment or whatever it is. How important is that in terms of if people are feeling sad, to think, well, actually, this is this sadness or this trauma, or this is a journey in and of itself. Let's not try and distract myself with something else that might make me happy.
No,
because there's a process there.
Yeah, that could make you worse. I think the important thing is to try and surrender, feel into whatever is happening to you, but try and be aware that this too shall pass. So change is constant. Nothing stays the same. Good times don't stay the same. Bad times don't stay the same. Try and surrender to the moment and trust that you will come out the other end. There might be a different outcome than the one that you hoped for or wanted. Could be a better one. Doesn't mean it's going to be a worse one. And one of the things in my book is that there are many stories from people around the world who have suffered different challenges and obstacles, whether it be related to their health, losing work, illness. And they have managed to find the good in the bad, the blessings in adversity. And in a way, those stories validate what I'm saying, what I'm trying to get across, and the different mechanisms that you can use to get to the other side.
There's a writer, Miranda Sawyer, and I heard her talking about dealing with life, and she was talking about it as from a point of view of somebody who was getting into sort of like her 50s, and then like it was like her expectations about what life would be like and preconceptions about where she thought she'd be at by that point and maybe where she was maybe at. And yeah. I thought it was really interesting when she talked about the preconceptions that you have on life are often based around frameworks that you've created yourself. So she used the example of that life was like a roller coaster, that it would get better and better and better, and then she'd hit retirement and then eventually would all go downhill sort of thing. Yeah. Then she said as she got older, she realized that it wasn't, that it was a little bit up, then it was a little bit down, then it was up again. So it was still a roller coaster, but it didn't necessarily have the image in your mind. I think that so many of us, I think, have a preconceived idea, maybe what's coming. People who say the phrase, "Oh, bad things always happen to me," what they're doing is that they always,
you know, they're manifested. If you say that,
yeah, they're almost filtering out and waiting for that, so they can go, "I told you so." And it always struck me there that idea of a preconception about what's to come does two things. One, it gives you a sense maybe of where you're going, and maybe helps you on the journey. But two, it then potentially gives you the opportunity to derail yourself a little bit, and then suddenly think that that things are going wrong.
Yeah.
Not that things aren't necessarily going wrong, but just things are different to the way that you thought they were going to be.
Yeah. Different isn't necessarily bad, though, is it? But I think we have to try and manage our expectations. And when our expectations are not met, maybe look at, why is this happening? It's happening maybe for me rather than to me. For instance, an example, another recent example, it's not in the book, and it's something that could happen to anyone, is I have a gorgeous Labrador retriever. Actually, to her, my book is dedicated to her. Her name is Daisy Boo. Now, I have a friend who looks after her when I need to go away. A few months ago, he said, "Look, I can no longer do that for you anymore." And he gave me his reasons. I was quite devastated. I thought, what am I going to do? She knows him. He looks after her well. Where does that leave me? And I thought, but do you know, what's happened since then has turned out to be much better, because I have some elderly friends who I met through dog walking. They have a large house, a large garden. They're at home all day. They don't want any payment, whereas my friend did accept payment. I give them a bottle of wine. So actually, the outcome is much better for me and much better for Daisy. So when things happen that are left of center and we think, oh, I didn't want that, that's awful, I can't cope, maybe we don't see the blessing straight away. But as things unraveled, if we give it time, if we go with the flow, and there's a reason for that phrase, maybe we come out a lot better. And there are many examples of that. There's a couple in the book, one about being bullied at work, where I was in, felt that I just had to leave. And what I had subsequently, my business is so much better than what I left behind. I couldn't see it at the time because I didn't know where I was going, but that's the benefit of hindsight.
In terms of the experience that you've had and the way that people respond and the way that you can sort of accept those changes and deal with those changes, but people must say to you, "Lisa, I don't have time to deal with it." You know, like if your dog walker is no longer, your dog sitter is no longer available, it's just another thing to do.
Yeah.
What a great example though of just how busy our lives are now, that it feels like if anything shifts slightly one way or the other, we almost crumble a little bit, don't we, and go, "Oh God, what am I going to do now?" What does that say about how we could just cope in general about the rat race and our lives? And maybe that need to have that little bit of time for almost like the personal admin, so that if things do crop up, you go, "Oh, that's something I'm going to have to deal with." But I know that I've got time to deal with it, or maybe I've got time now to think of a few potential plans about what my options might be.
I think we try to, and it's human nature, to control too much. We can try to control our situations, our challenges, our destiny. And that doesn't work. I think we come up against a brick wall. And I think we also dwell too much on the past and think too much about the future. Let's try living in the present moment, because if we don't, we're going to miss enjoying what's happening here and now. This is the only time we've got what's happening to us now. So I think our fast-paced world doesn't help us. We need to step back from it a little bit and think about the things that can help us. Maybe there's a lot of talk about meditation. I've been meditating for years. I find it hugely helpful in my day-to-day life. It gives me time to sit still, to go within, to think. Solutions to problems can often come then. Spending time in nature. I think too many of us are disconnected from nature. We spend too much time with technology, sitting in front of computers, on our phones. Let's spend more time in nature. We're part of the same whole. It's almost like we need to go back to basics. You know, draw breath, just relax and think.
Huge that. How big a part is nature in your
massive
experience?
Massive. I've always loved nature and animals. It's been a big part of my life, all of my life. But it's such a significant part that I actually, and this might sound a bit woo-woo to you, but I see messages in nature. If I'm outside with my dog and I'm trying to find the solution to a problem, I might look up at the clouds and I'll see an X in the sky, you know, where two plane trails. And I'll think, right, I'm not supposed to do that thing that I'm thinking about. The way a leaf falls from a tree might give me an idea about something. The more in tune you are with yourself and nature, the more you're going to find the answers that you're looking for.
I started running very recently, the last few years. And I find that that's my defragmentation sort of mode, if you like. And it's also the place where I have those ideas. And it's interesting that idea, you know, you see something. I can see like literally the name of a plumber's brand on a van. And just like if there's a bit of a pun in it, that will just trigger a little bit of something. But what I've done is, and I presume this is the same with you, rather than looking for an overt sign, it's just your brain is able to absorb things in a little bit, hit those moments that spark the inspiration, the creativity, those things that then just take you to that next level. But if you'd have just been staring at the screen, if you hadn't have taken the dog out for a walk or whatever, you'd have sat there thinking, oh, I'm not feeling very inspired. Whereas actually, I think people massively undervalue what you've just talked about there, because they think, well, if I just go for a walk in nature, I'm not doing anything.
Oh, no, you're doing everything to help yourself. What you say is so true. And it's about being in touch with our intuition. Our intuition is really about our feelings. That's where we get guidance and direction. That's what the word red flag means. What's a red flag? It's when you get that feeling that something's not right, that doesn't feel right. So don't ignore it. That feeling has come in for a reason. Why is that feeling there? What is it doing to you? What do you need to examine? How do you need to act upon it? So it's about being in touch with our intuition, and being in nature that's why we talk about in the spiritual world, grounding in nature. That's often where you're going to be more in touch with your intuition.
What, in terms of some of the people you surround yourself in your life, can I ask you about sort of like, I think we all sort of like toxic people who sort of dramas are sort of encompassing and so on and so on. This sounds like a silly question. Should we get them a copy of the book? Can you be saved from your own toxicity, if you like?
You have to want to. My personal experience is that such people are not interested in that because they don't acknowledge that they have a problem. So the problem is always somebody else. Someone else has caused it. It would be nice if, and again, I'm talking about my personal experience, so I'm not generalizing. It would be nice if such people felt that there would be some benefit to themselves and have a knock-on effect to others to learn more about greater awareness. I think it would be good for such people to read my book, but I'm not sure that they would. the book is really designed for people who are looking to find a path through difficulties, how they can use different tools, methods of thinking, awareness, perspective, hints, tips, and so on to be happy again, because that's all we want at the end of the day.
Yeah, what I like about the fact is you can almost pick it up and just turn to a page and just sort of embrace whatever's happening in that.
Yeah, you don't have to follow it page by page or chapter by chapter. And in fact, I was surprised at how many readers got back to me and said, oh, I just flick through and choose a different section to read. Because there are, like, you know, real life stories. Then there are little sort of anecdotes. And then there are what I call blessing bites, you know, tips and reinforcers and so on. Then there are stories with a character that I've developed. So there's lots of different ways of getting into things. But that did surprise me when readers started saying, no, I just pick a page here and there and read. And of course, the sections are short as well. You know, there's not reams and reams and reams of long chapters.
And it's also not bogged down in theory, is it? There are a lot of practical steps as well. Can I actually just, in terms of that, now, and you talked about, you know, still going through difficult times and coming up against challenges, what are those sort of go-tos that you have now, which are your, okay, just need to shift this slightly in my brain? What are those things that you now do?
So one of the first things I'll do is meditate. And there's lots of different types of meditation. It's almost like being in a candy store. You know, you've got a wide range, a huge selection. You've got visualizations, you've got transcendental meditation, you've got guided meditations, unguided meditations. The more you do, the more you'll find what's right for you or right for the situation that you're facing. I do a lot of journaling, writing down, or even speaking out. I talk a lot to myself when I'm out walking Daisy, so I'm sure the whole village hears me sometimes, because I find that speaking out is a good release and relief. I will seek guidance and support from people whom I trust, family, friends, and people I call my soul tribe, people who think and feel the way I do, you know, spiritual people. I'm very, very big on practicing self-care, implementing healthy boundaries. I used to be a massive people pleaser, always putting others before myself. And that was, that did not serve me well. My own needs, wants, and expectations were often crushed, my own fault, because I put others first. It's about making sure that my cup is full, because I can't help anyone else until my cup's full. It's a bit like when you're on a plane, if there's an incident and the oxygen mask drops, you're expected to put the mask on yourself first before your child or vulnerable person sitting next to you. It's the same principle. Look after yourself. It's not selfish, it's selfless. So I'm very, very big on practicing self-care, giving myself time, managing my expectations, going with the flow where I can, knowing myself better and flipping the way I think when bad things happen. So another recent example, my brother-in-law, upon my sister's death, is now returning to Mexico. He's been here for 25 years. He's like a brother to me. I don't want him to go. I'll miss him to bits. And it looks like he's flying next month. So I'm feeling unsettled about it. But I'm trying to think, that's okay. When he's there and he's got his own place and he's settled and sorted, I'll go and visit him. He's told me he's going to come back and visit me. So I'm trying to think along the lines of, yes, his situation and my situation are changing, but it doesn't change the bond that we have, the connection that we have. We both still have Jane, my sister, in our hearts. So I'm trying to think, this is not a negative thing. It's just a deviation from the path that we're on.
Absolutely. Great advice. Finding Happiness When It Hurts. It's a book that's available now. I'll put a link in the podcast notes. Is that okay, Lisa? And people can find out some more information about that. But thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for speaking to us on Mental Health Monday.
Thank you so much, Rick. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.